The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the ESPN FC studios and this edition of the show. Alongside Steve Nickel, I'm Sebastian Salazar. Stevie, a lot to get to. Wayne Rooney has retired from professional football, so a surprising result in the Roman Derby. But we start by welcoming into the show a few other gentlemen. Big match to talk about in the Premier League. Frank LaBeouf, Craig Burley, Stuart Robson. And it is at the top of the table where we find both Manchester United and Liverpool United. 3 points clear of Liverpool. Of course, the two sides will meet at Anfield on Sundays. Both managers speaking in the build-up to this one. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had this to say about his team's chances of winning Sunday. If you look at the last few seasons, it would be an upset. It would be a shock. We're looking forward to the game, and hopefully we can cause that upset. Craig, what do you say? Would it be a shock if, as the Manchester United manager suggests, the league leaders won on Sunday?
Not really, no. And once again, he's talking nonsense. If you look at the last two or three seasons, then yeah, he's correct, because they left United, both City and Liverpool left United and the rest and their tailwind behind them. So, but we're not talking about the last 3 years. We're talking about this season, where the only reason that Man United and anybody else is in with a shout at winning this league is because so far Liverpool and City have fallen below the standards that they've set. And so for that reason, it would not be an upset, particularly when you look at the way Liverpool have been playing. Yeah, I mean, the home form's been good. Undefeated at home, I think one draw. Away form's been shoddy. So it wouldn't be a surprise. And, he knows that. And that's just rhetoric from him.
From the Liverpool perspective, Stevie, what scares you about Manchester United?
Well, clearly going forward, Rashford and Fernandes. Because it seems a little harsh, but without those two, this is a completely different Manchester United. And so, quite honestly, Liverpool's thoughts will be more on, A, what they can do to get better, i.e. scoring goals and making chances and getting the front three back to where they should be. And, of course, the obvious problem of what happens defensively. You know, who are the centre-backs? So I think Liverpool's thoughts are going to be more about how do they cover up the deficiencies and how do they get better going forward, as opposed to Manchester United, because it's pretty clear this game's going to be played Liverpool going forward and United using their pace against two midfielders, which I think will be playing centre-back for Liverpool.
Interesting, as we look at the recent results for these two teams in the Premier League. Liverpool struggling, Manchester United rolling, 11 unbeaten for United. Robbo, they say in big matches you can throw form out the window, but if we were picking a favourite based on form, it'd be United, wouldn't it?
It would, and I'll go with Stevie's point about the centre-halves for Liverpool. That's a big worry for me, from Liverpool's point of view. If Rashford makes runs behind, and that's the key to it, Rashford making runs behind, whoever's playing up front with him making runs behind, Bruno Fernandes getting on the ball and playing them in behind, because whenever I've seen Liverpool this season, they're trying to hold this high line. And if you're not playing with the same centre-halves week in, week out, they don't have an understanding. I saw that when a young kid ran past him in the Aston Villa Cup game last week, when Fabinho wasn't round on the cover and the young centre-half didn't deal with it properly. And the right-back's a problem. He's great going forward, but he can't defend at the moment. Whoever's playing at right back can't defend. So they're the areas that Manchester United can break Liverpool down. But of course, Liverpool have got those attacking three. If they play at their very best, you can see them causing Manchester United problems.
Frank, how big are the concerns at the back for Liverpool?
They're huge. I mean, the loss of Van Dijk, of course. We don't know if Matip will be back. We know that on the right side, you don't really know how to defend. So there is options for Manchester United, who, as Stevie and Robos just said, they're going to play in counter-attack. So they're going to find open spaces. And if on the right side they don't defend properly, if they're not secure in the center, as centre-halves, it's going to be a problem for Liverpool. But Liverpool will have to get the ball, because they are the best when they have the ball. But it would be very interesting, because tactically we all know that Manchester United is looking forward to seeing Liverpool getting the ball and counter-attack them. So you know, I don't know who's going to be the winner. It's going to be an interesting game. Hopefully a good game to watch.
You know, there's one huge thing in Manchester United's favour. There's no crowd. Listen, Manchester United, over the last decade, as much as I can remember, have pretty much bottled it every time they've gotten to Anfield. You know, the atmosphere at Anfield is completely different to anything else that a Manchester United player faces anywhere in the world. I mean, the vitriol is just incredible. And Craig will know all about that with Celtic and Rangers. That is not going to be there. That's not going to be something that Manchester United are going to have to beat. And so, if ever they're going to win a game at Anfield, it's going to be on Sunday, and a lot of it will have to do because there's no crowd there.
Craig, you've been adamant that for you, City and Liverpool are the favourites to win the Premier League in the end. Would a United victory on Sunday change that for you?
Oh, my God. We love short-termism in this programme, don't we? We love...
They'd be six points clear of Liverpool halfway through the season. That's not nothing.
Well, you're discounting Manchester City. You may have seen them recently. They've been pretty good with a deleted squad and no striker. We got to put this day-to-day, 24-hour, you know, analysis behind us, because I'm not going to come on this programme every week and have a discussion about, are you, you know, day-to-day, was you wrong about Ollie? Are Man United favourites to win the league? No, they are not. Now, they may win this game, but they're not, in my opinion. They might be in other people's opinion, but I've continually stressed the two best teams in the league are Manchester City and Liverpool. Now, you may have seen City take apart Chelsea and United recently. Now, the other side of the coin with Liverpool is, I think Klopp's going to put a marker down with this moaning and groaning. He's moaned about the penalties. He's moaned about this, that and the next thing. I know they've got injuries, and it's not just Fabinho going back into the centre-half position that's a problem. It's a problem taking him out of the middle of the park. Do they bring Thiago back in? The other side of the coin is, and Stevie talked about it over the last week or two, is the blunt attack. Now, Firmino's got three goals in the Premier League, or five goals, whatever it is. He's not good enough. Now, I know he's got other facets to his game, but he needs to roll his sleeves up. And on top of that, if you look at the midfield, that's another issue for them, because when your strikers are not performing, you've got to get goals from the middle of the park. And I know Thiago's had his injuries. I know Henderson's a defensive midfield. I think he's got one. You've got Gini Wijnaldum with one. And young Curtis Jones, who's been excellent and has had rave reviews, hasn't been on the score sheet yet. And so you need to get, when your front line are not operating as they were, you need to get a support network from the middle of the park. And that's one of the reasons that Liverpool have been flagging at times, is that they've looked too hard to Salah, Sadio Mane and Roberto Firmino. They're going to have to get goals from the middle of the park. Gini Wijnaldum, we know, can be a threat, but it's been very sporadic for him this year. But, you know, this game could go anyway, Seb, but I'm not, you know, we've got to quit this nonsense about every time I come on this programme are Man United favourites to win the league. Because my answer's going to be the same up until almost the end of the season if they're sitting at the top of the league, and then I might change my mind.
Stevie?
You know, I think the answer to, you know, Manchester United winning the Premier League and asking people about that now, if you want to look, you know, Craig's talking about looking short term. Let's look at the long term. The long term is there's half a season to go. And I don't think, and I know a lot of people don't think, Manchester United can get any better than they are now. But I'll tell you what, there are two teams who 100%...
Why is that? Just down to the players?
Who 100% can get better as a team. And that is City and Liverpool. Well, we're talking about Liverpool not having the centre-backs. We're talking about the struggling to score goals. By the way, they're only 3 points behind, right? They're sitting second, and they've got another gear to go, as have Manchester City. So to say that United are favourites to win the league isn't true, because there's two other sides who we know will get better, and we know they can get better, whereas United, I think what we're seeing from United is what they are. They ain't getting any better.
Craig mentioned the constant discussion around penalties recently, starting with Jurgen Klopp. Of course, talking about the amount of penalties Manchester United has gotten compared to Liverpool. Here you see the the statistics. As far as an explanation, we may have gotten one from Marcus Rashford, who said here, I remember when Jose was manager, there were five or six times where I should have had a penalty, and Jose ended up saying to me, if you are not savvy about the way you do it, then they are not going to give it. After that, we started to get a few penalties. Frank, no surprise, it was Jose Mourinho who showed United how to get all the pens, huh?
Of course, but he's clever. I mean, I wouldn't say savvy. I would say smarter, you know, in a way that honesty doesn't pay in a football world. You know that if you stay up, you know, the referee would think that, in fact, it wasn't really a foul on you. But if you exaggerate, the referee might see, but will think as well that it was maybe a real foul. So he will consider the foul and the dive and maybe give you a penalty. That's sad in a way, but it's what it is. And the reality of that world, and it's why we see lots of forward players diving. It's always been like that. I played with Casiraghi, but I played against Casiraghi when he was playing for Italy. And I saw him diving without even touching him. Mm. And I clapped him and I said, well done. Nice dive, you know. But the referee gave him a free kick. He was 1 yard away from me. He always existed. We always existed, that kind of behavior. And it pays off because referee don't want to see a foul if the players make the effort to stay up.
Rabo, Klopp's clearly not talking about the penalties and counting them on his fingers for no reason. Do you have any problem with him trying to influence the officials perhaps before a big match?
I've got no problem in trying to influence the referee. I've got a problem with him whinging and moaning all the time about all the things that are going on. He's got to concentrate on his team. And he reminds me very much at the moment of a former Arsenal manager that when he was under a little bit of pressure, started moaning about this, that and the other and put more pressure on the players to a certain degree. At the moment, I don't think he's coping very well with the pressure. And that then rubs off onto the players. And that's why I don't think they're performing very well at the moment in the front areas. I think he's got to sort himself out and become the manager and the coach that he's been for the last 2.5 years, which is brilliant. Now he's just, I think he's going off the boil slightly.
But Craig, he says he's not Sir Alex Ferguson. He can't play mind games. What do we make of it?
I don't know really. I don't really care, to be honest. I'm only interested in what happens on the field. And, you know, we have VAR. If players are going to ground a little bit easier on both sides, the difficulty is with the penalty thing, is that if players are going to ground a little bit easier and it goes to VAR, then if there's any kind of contact at all, if the referee's given a penalty, they probably won't reverse it because they'll go down this nonsensical, clear and obvious route. And then it's just a debate for another, you know, 7 days or 14 days. So, you know, you can be quite clever about it. Look, Jurgen, as Robbo said, Jurgen Klopp has more than proved himself as a manager. This is a really tricky season for Liverpool as champions for the first time in years. They have Man City who are getting stronger and stronger and who've coped with a COVID problem at the club, self-inflicted some of it, and without a major striker. They've coped with a United side who have got better. There's no doubt about that. And are a threat, as Stevie said, particularly with Rashford and Fernandes. And he's got to cope without his best player, who's been out injured since almost the start of the season. And so he's got to have to find a way. And that's what really good coaches do. And look, there'll be incidents between now and end of the season where we'll debate if it was a free kick or a penalty or who got what. But ultimately, the league title will come down to who's been the most consistent team. And if that's United, then fine. But I think at the moment, Liverpool, as Stevie said, can improve and need to improve. And City look as if they've got a real head of steam going. So, it swings two ways here. If Liverpool give them a going over at the weekend, and they've already had a going over this season by City, they've had a going over by Tottenham, they haven't beaten any of the real big boys this season in the Premier League, and so they've got to put a marker down in some sense. They've gone away and whipped the backsides of most of the other teams in the Premier League, but they haven't beat anybody in the league, I don't believe, in and around them. So there's some pressure on Man United as well to show that they are the real deal.
All right, let's get some predictions then. Craig, I'll start with you. What do you think happens on Sunday?
Draw.
Stuart?
Yeah, I'm going to go for a draw as well.
Frank? 3-3?
Liverpool, 3-0.
Mm. Wow.
3-0.
I'm going for a draw as well. I'm
really?
I am.
Why?
Well, because I can't see Liverpool keeping a clean sheet.
Okay.
And there's no way that the front three are not going to score. Mm. They've scored one goal in three games. It's not happening, so I'm going for a draw.
Right, well, we got to wait till Sunday for Liverpool and Manchester United, but here's a look at the rest of the Premier League schedule. Action starts on Saturday with a five-pack of games, three on Sunday, and then Arsenal-Newcastle wrap up the match day on Monday.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Very much a one-way affair in the Rome Derby on Friday. Lazio 3-0 winners over Roma. Ciro Immobile opening the scoring. Luis Alberto with a brace as Lazio picks up a huge 3 points. Here's what it means atop the Serie A table. AC Milan still 3 points clear of Inter. Of course, Inter and Juventus will play on Sunday. Roma then stuck in third place. Rabo still with us, as is Stevie. Rabo, I'll start with you. Just so disappointing, this performance, if you're a Roma fan, primarily because most of that damage was self-inflicted.
Yeah, it was a poor performance, but I've seen them perform poorly on three occasions this season. They lost to Atalanta heavily, and they're just, when they're playing away against the better teams, they just don't play well enough. They were all over the place defensively. They allowed Lazio's players to run in behind them. They getting caught on the ball in midfield. They didn't react quickly enough when the ball changed hands, and it was far too easy for Lazzari, the right back or right wing back, to keep running in behind Ibanez. And I didn't think Smalling organised the back three particularly well, and Mancini didn't play well, and Immobile kept on pulling out onto him and running behind him. I thought it was an excellent display from Lazio, but really poor from Roma and their coach, Paolo Fonseca.
Stevie, you're usually pretty harsh on defenders. What do you think of Roma today?
Oh my goodness. They looked as though they'd been thrown on the field today for the first time. You know, and I was looking forward to seeing them. You know, Gab was talking highly of them during the week, that they could be a factor in this title race. But I'll tell you what, if you look at that back line, and if that's it, if they can't do anything else, they're in big trouble. I mean, they were just a complete and utter shambles. Got all the basics wrong. Couldn't hold the line. And then, of course, more importantly, when anybody in a blue jersey was getting ready for a hit, there was nobody close to closing the ball down. So, defensively, complete shambles.
Roma then missing out on a chance to climb further up the table. Of course, it's Inter and Juventus on Sunday. Rabo, massive match there. But Inter Milan and Antonio Conte have really struggled in recent months in the big game. Any suggestion that that'll change this weekend?
I think they're going to play better, but they have a real problem at the start of games. There's been so many games this season where they've started far too slowly. They try and play out from the back. They get caught on the ball. They give goals away cheaply, and they always think they can get back into the games. But if you give goals away cheaply and early against Juventus, there's no way back into the game for them. So they've got to make sure that they get the ball into the front two with a bit of quality. And if they can do that, they're going to cause Juventus problems. And if they can't do that, they're going to have to keep switching the play out to their wing-backs. Because he's now quite brave, Antonio Conte. His wing-backs play really high up the field, Young down the left-hand side, Hakimi almost playing like a right winger, and at times they can be exposed, and that's where the likes of Morata, if he's playing, and Ronaldo, and one or two of the midfield runners, Ramsey, if he's playing, go beyond Inter's back three, they can cause problems. But I see this being a really tight game, and I'm going to go with Inter as slight favourites.
All right, Inter as slight favourites then to win. I guess that's who you're probably taking with your choice. What's your prediction for Sunday?
I'm going to go with Inter to win the game by 3-2.
Very well. Stevie?
Listen, if there's a team in the world, when they've been asked a question, come up with the answers, it's Juventus.
There you go. There you go. Serie Awesome Podcast. You can get plenty more on Serie A. Matteo, Mina, and Nikki with all the build-up to Inter and Juve.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
How about this? Union Berlin, the surprise package of the Bundesliga season, continues to deliver on Friday with a late 1-0 win over Bayer Leverkusen, who was third place entering the match. Here's what it means for the top of the Bundesliga, Berlin, and even with Dortmund on points and goal differential. Dortmund, of course, could jump back ahead by the weekend's close. How about that? Bayern Munich still 2 points clear of their nearest chasers, Leipzig. Leverkusen stuck in third. Archie Rintut joins us now for more. I was going to start with getting your sense on exactly what happened to Bayer Leverkusen in this match, Archie, but you want to give some love to Union Berlin. Go ahead. They are the best story of the season in the Bundesliga.
Exactly. The feel-good story of this season, because everybody was expecting them to have second season syndrome after their remarkable result to actually stay in the division last year in their first ever season in the Bundesliga. But instead, they have got even better. They've progressed their playing style as well. And despite losing their best player, Max Kruse, through injury back in December, they've gone on and got points against Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich, and tonight beaten Bayer Leverkusen as well. So, incredible story. Their players earn on average around about 10 times less than your Bayern Munich player would. And if you do a bit of mental gymnastics, then they could even be top of the table given some of the winning positions that they've given up so far this season. So, fantastic story and one that I hope can only continue.
Archie, the other side of the coin, of course, Bayer Leverkusen. What's going on with this team, man? They score some fantastic goals, and yet off a match like today, those conversations we were having a couple weeks ago, flirting with the idea of them as title contenders, don't really seem legitimate anymore.
Well, this is a point that Peter Bosch has played with himself. He says whenever they win, they're praised. I don't think that's a word. They're praised. And now this has fallen out. Disaster. A bit like Leverkusen's performance tonight. No, the thing with Leverkusen is that if they play well, then everything's great. But if they don't, then it's naive and everything's gone wrong. And you talk there about the great goals that they've scored. I think that's part of the issue, is that those are only going to happen for a certain amount of time. You can't be relying on wonder strikes for every single game. And now that that's dried up, they're struggling a little bit to create many clear-cut scoring opportunities. They're still playing a high-risk and entertaining style of football, but Jonathan Tah is one player I'd like to pick out, their centre-back, who had a documentary come out about him in Germany, about him potentially being the next German Virgil van Dijk. Mm. Now, things have not gone particularly well for him since then, and you wonder, has he taken his eye off the ball a little bit in that sense, because Leverkusen have also started to look a little bit shakier at the back.
All right, let's push forward to Saturday. Dortmund are hosting Mainz. Now, under Lucien Favre, I would say this is exactly the type of game that Dortmund would lose or drop points in. They're coming off a couple wins, and Mainz is in dead last place. So is this where we find out if the new Dortmund is really any better than the old Dortmund?
Well, generally, their home form under Lucien Favre, and ever since they've had to play most of their games behind closed doors, has been very poor. They've not won very many home games at all. I was at a game against Mainz behind closed doors, which they lost 2-0 at the end of last season. And I think what a key factor in this game is going to be the fact that Axel Witsel is out, but that's been something of a blessing in disguise for Borussia Dortmund, as we saw against RB Leipzig. The difference that it made having Emre Can come into the centre of that midfield and the difference in impetus that he gave them going forward. I think that that's going to be key in accelerating the play. They still need to find a way to shut down games earlier on, because they've only scored 5 of their 31 Bundesliga goals in the first half so far this season. Mainz under their new coach, Bo Svensson. He has only had one game in charge so far. They lost that 2-0 to Eintracht Frankfurt. Question for me is whether they're going to go with two up front, like they did actually when they beat Borussia Dortmund at Signal Iduna Park last season. But either way, I would still imagine that Borussia Dortmund will have too much.
They certainly had too much against Leipzig last weekend. A really disappointing result for Leipzig. Surely they need a bounce back on Saturday.
Yeah, particularly with Bayern Munich playing on Sunday against Freiburg, a good chance for them to put a little bit of pressure on Bayern. But I was speaking to their coach, Julian Nagelsmann, after the game against Borussia Dortmund for us last weekend, and he said that his players weren't playing enough balls in behind. That has been, I guess, one of the biggest secrets is the way that they've been able to get Angelinho on that left-hand side breaking in. But the problem is that after Thomas Meunier, who I thought had a very good game against him, which I wasn't necessarily expecting, after they tried it a few times, they kind of laid off and tried to play it a little bit shorter. And as they did, they lost control of the game and Dortmund were able to go on. So they're playing against a Wolfsburg side who have also lost form recently. They've only won one of their last five games, I think it is, since they beat Eintracht Frankfurt by 2-1. So they've been really badly affected by people picking up the coronavirus in their squad and the impact that that's had on a couple of their players as well. So this should be a chance for Leipzig to, rack up 3 points again.
All right, let's get to Bayern Munich. The loss against Gladbach, one thing. The defeat, though, against Holstein Kiel in the German Cup, another thing. I usually feel like the response from the German press to Bayern Munich's ups and downs is pretty measured. Is there any talk of a crisis yet at Bayern?
I think crisis would be too far, given that they've lost, three games in their last 55 matches now in all competitions, even if they've now lost more games in 2021 than they did in the entirety of 2020, what with this penalty shootout defeat to Holstein Kiel. That they have Leon Goretzka and Kingsley Coman coming back this game against Freiburg will help them, but the issue is defensively, Hansi Flick has said that they've just not had the time to train, such as the amount of midweek games that they've had to play in. And they're playing against a Freiburg side who, ever since they switched from a 4-4-2 into a 3-4-3 formation, are the form team in Europe's top five leagues. They are the only side to have won their last five games. So, particularly facing up against Vincenzo Grifo, who is a player who is too good for Freiburg but hasn't quite made it when he's gone to Hoffenheim and Gladbach. He's a very dangerous player going forward, as has been Emerdin Demirovic as well. So I think that Bayern's run without a clean sheet may still go on after Sunday.
All right, Archie, Bayern at the top of the table, at the bottom of the table, or near it, Schalke. Now, they're still in the market for a striker, despite Matthew Hoppe, the young American's hat trick just the other weekend. Does that surprise you?
No, because Gonzalo Paciencia has a long-term knee injury. Vedad Ibisevic, who had a training ground falling out at Schalke back in November, was let go by the club and was told that he wasn't needed. And then in an embarrassing turn of events, Jochen Schneider, the sporting director, was reported to have called him and said, actually, do you want to come back after the knee injury to Paciencia? So Huntelaar being asked after is no surprise. Huntelaar has declared his love for Schalke. Christian Gross, the Schalke coach, has said how there is a mutual interest in signing him. But you wonder what good Huntelaar will do, because he's a bit of an immobile force. Once you get the ball into the area, fine, great player, even still at his age. He scored within a minute of coming on for Ajax the other night. But I just wonder, with Schalke's style of play, he's only going to be a force really off the bench. And it's a lot of pressure to put on Matthew Hoppe's shoulders.
Is anybody making the case for Matthew Hoppe, or is it just a case of too much too soon?
Well, let's put it this way. When I saw Matthew Hoppe play against Hertha, I thought he would be waiting a little bit longer for his first goal than the hat-trick that he subsequently went and scored against Hoffenheim. So I think that there need to be measured expectations on him. He is still a teenager, and he had a wonderful game against Hoffenheim. But what will happen in the coming weeks, I'm not too sure. He's really worked on his movement well, but given the situation that Schalke are in right now, they do need backup for him.
Very well, Archie. Thank you very much. Of course, ESPN Plus, your exclusive home for the Bundesliga. Here's a look at the weekend slate. Plenty of action Saturday and then Sunday. Bayern Munich and Freiburg. Freiburg have won 5 straight in the league. Wayne Rooney has retired from professional football at 35 years old. He'll take over as Derby County's permanent manager. He's been the interim boss since November. Career beginning back in 2002. He burst onto the scene at Everton at just 16 years old, eventually becoming the top scorer for Manchester United, the English national team. 5 league titles to go along with that Champions League in 2008. Frank and Stewart still with us. Stevie as well. Boy, what a career. Take us back, because it's been a while, maybe over a decade now. Take us back to his prime. How good was Rooney in his peak?
Well, he was at his best. He could play for the best or any of the best teams on the planet. You know, any team, if he was available, would fight to get Wayne Rooney in their side. And listen, I can come out with all the cliches about his goals and his medals and his... But when I think of Wayne Rooney, I think about a guy that you could drop into any situation on a football field and he would make it better for his team. Mm. And I'm not talking about if it's a silky game of soccer with loads of passing and all that kind of stuff. You could drop Wayne Rooney into the middle of a battle, in the middle of a fight, and he'd still end up making his team better. Mm. And at the end of it, he'd score the winning goal. Right. That's what I think about when I think of Wayne Rooney.
You talk about the winning goal, kind of the moment where he bursts onto the scene, the winning goal against Arsenal in the fall of 2004. Robbo, it's such a magical moment, but I guess the thing with Rooney is that he lived up to the height. He did that. He wasn't even 17 yet.
Well, I saw him about 6 months early. He was playing for Everton's youth team against Wimbledon's youth team, and Everton won 4-1 at their training ground. And he was a 15, 16-year-old playing against under-18s, and he scored a hat-trick, and he was absolutely magnificent. He could run in behind. He was intelligent, way beyond his years. He had brilliant skill, and it was no surprise when he burst onto the scene and scored that goal against Arsenal. I think the only regret he would probably have is he lost his athleticism quite early on in his career, so he had to change his game somewhat, because as a youngster, he could burst past people. He had great ability to run with the ball. He was an excellent finisher as well. But what a career he had.
Frank, at his very best, how good was Rooney?
Absolutely fantastic. I mean, it is what makes him different than main striker nowadays is he was capable of creating actions for himself and opportunities for himself. He could go play number 10, and he has the number 10, and was going backward to get the ball and create the chances to score by himself. He was absolutely fantastic. I mean, I remember that bicycle kick against Manchester City for the derby at Old Trafford. I mean, despite the fight, and I'm just joking, despite the fight, he didn't go my way, you know, when I went bald, and he also went bald, you know, he went to some other direction. I love the man. I really love the man. I mean, for I followed him since he was at Everton, and I see his debut and then what he was playing for Manchester United. I mean, there are rare people who, as and Stevie just said, that you could put him with the worst team in the Premier League. I'm sure he will save them because the quality were there, and he didn't expect anything from the others. He was giving 100% all the time, every game he played.
Robbo, how do you suppose he'll get on as a manager right now? Derby 22nd in the championship. Baptism by fire, yeah?
Yeah, but he's got Steve McLaren as his technical director. I'm sure he'll be giving him a lot of advice. He's been the Derby County manager on a couple of occasions. I think he's got Liam Resenia, who's an up-and-coming coach alongside him. So you need good coaches in and around you. It's his first job. And I think he'd be quite pleased if Mel Morris, who was the owner, sells up to the consortium, because Mel Morris has made it very difficult for the managers that have been at Derby County over the last few years. He's made some bad decisions. He's been a hire and fire in the man. He wanted to manage the team at times, but I think he's going to release that to the new owners, and hopefully he'll have a good time and he'll be a good coach and he'll go on and manage in the Premier League.
Wayne Rooney then now full-time in charge of Derby County, and plenty of work for Rooney to do as a manager. Derby right now 22nd in the championship.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire, you need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, that's all the time we've got for today's edition of the show. Thanks to Craig and Archie for joining us. Stevie, we got a little bit more work to do.
Well,
that's right.
No, you have. I'm going home.
I got a little more work. You too. Extra time. We take your questions straight off of Twitter. Stevie joined by Frank and Stuart. Don't miss it. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into the ESPN FC Studios, a special Friday edition of Extra Time. Got your tweets. Got Stevie Nickel with us.
Hey, everybody. What's that?
Every time you do an impression of me, it changes, but it never improves. It never makes me look better.
Well, it's hard to make you look better.
Just keep setting them up. We also have Stuart Robbs and Frank LaBeouf with us. Robbo, first question for you. News is that Cristiano Ronaldo is looking to renew his contract until 2023. Would it be a good move for Juventus?
Would it be a good move? Well, they're going to be paying him a lot of money. I think he's still scoring goals. He's still looking to be a player that will affect games. He's not affecting games quite as much in the general play. Would it be a good move? I think it would be a good move for Ronaldo. Not quite so good for Juventus.
Lukewarm there from Robbo. Frank, do you think Bayern is still going to win the Champions League? We've been talking a lot about Bayern in their recent struggles. Frank?
You know, that's a good question, because on this pandemic year, you know, what is sure in the world of football? I don't know. You know, they just lost in Cup against Kiel. So I would say that for me, they're still the best team. But everything can change within 3-4 months. So let's say they're still my favorite, and I would say yes. But you know, what's going to happen to other clubs? Are they going to get better? Let's see. We just hope that.
Are they your favorites for the Champions League, Stevie?
I guess I would say that right now they're probably still the team I would want to avoid more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. Right now, as Frank says, in 3 or 4 months that could totally change. Mm. It's hard to put your money on anything in football right now.
Robbo, right now, who do you think's the best team in Europe?
Well, I was going to say Bayern Munich, but I've just seen flaws in their defensive line over the last few weeks. Teams are starting to find out a way of playing against that high offside line and that high pressing game. So they're still the best team, but they're going to have to do a lot of work on the defensive side of the game over the next few weeks.
For all the boys.
Sabi, Sabi, I'm sorry, but your question wasn't who's the best team right now in Europe. Right now, for me, the best team is Manchester City. So, but your question was, if Bayern Munich is still the favorite? Yes.
Yes.
If Manchester City is back to the race, and I think Manchester City is the best team in Europe right now.
Frank LaBeouf, thank you for holding me accountable. I did not exactly replicate the question.
I didn't know Craig
Robbo,
was on.
As it was on
was Craig on extra time today? I didn't.
It just helps to have somebody, you know, backing you up. You know, everybody likes a good backup. Make sure we don't make any mistakes. Accuracy very important here on extra time. Yeah. For all the boys, how bad does the locker room energy feel after losing a cup final, especially on one of the last kicks of the game? You ever lost a cup final on a last kick of the game? You lost a league on
lost
kind of
the league
last
on the last kick of the game, which is worse.
Yeah, what was that locker room like?
Total silence.
Nothing.
Total silence. Nothing to say, nobody then to say. You didn't say anything. Heads down, eyes on the floor, on the ceiling, silence.
How long till people start talking? Is it like the bus ride? Is it the next time you see each other training? Because you were a pretty close group, that Liverpool team.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine.
It depends. Listen, when it's the last game of the season,
right,
then you don't get that at all because everybody just goes and that's it till next season. But cup finals generally are before the end of the season. And it usually takes, you know, every team's got the joker or somebody who always, whether they mean to or don't, kind of lighten the load.
Yeah.
And for the Revs particularly, that was Matt Rees. He would say something or come up with his daft laugh and it would just kind of break the ice. And then it was like, okay, onwards and upwards.
Frank, Craig always tells us that you never stopped talking in the Chelsea dressing room. Was there ever a defeat that shut you up?
Yeah, the problem is we always won. That's the problem. It's why I never shut up. I lost my first French Cup with Strasbourg. No way we could have won against Paris Saint-Germain. And I lost the Charity Shield at Wembley against Manchester United. But what is my Charity Shield? Is it a real trophy? I don't know. And I lost my last cup with Al Wakra in Qatar, when my last shot of my career was a penalty because we went to penalty kicks, and I scored, but we lost. And I was upset because I couldn't get the bonuses from Qatar. It's always huge, as you know. So, but I kept talking, no worries.
Good. Would have been a shame to miss like the last kick of your career. That would have been, you just, what a brutal way to go out. The boys have told us about their favorite away grounds and players they had a tough time against physically. Can they name any players or teams that they loved to play against? Robbo, you first.
I always enjoyed playing at Goodison Park. I scored, I think, 3 goals there in about 6 or 7 games. They were a very good side, but I enjoyed playing against them. It was always a good battle against Peter Reid and Paul Bracewell in that midfield area. I think I played at right back on a couple of occasions up against, this takes you back, Alan Ainscoe and one or two others. So I always enjoyed playing at Goodison Park. It was a great atmosphere, one of the best grounds in the it was then the Division 1 of English football.
Frank, who did you love? Or Stevie, who did you love playing against?
Hey, Robbo, you must have played against Kenny at Everton. Andy King.
Kenny Dalglish?
No, Andy King.
Who did you say?
Andy King.
Andy King. I think I might have played against him on a couple of occasions. When he was sort of just drifting out and he was playing in the sort of, I would say, a forward midfield role. But I didn't play against him when I was playing in midfield. It was always right back in the first couple of years.
Right,
and then
Scouser.
Central midfield against Peter Reid.
Right, Scouser and Andy, when he finished, opened the bookies.
Mm.
Unfortunately, he's the only bookie I know that never made a penny.
Really?
Yes.
Frank, who'd you love playing against?
At the time, I loved playing against Spurs at White Hart Lane because I think Chelsea didn't lose for made lots of assists and score goals, you know, against that team. So it was nice. And also playing against Leicester. I was pretty fortunate playing against, every time I played against Leicester. They were my lucky penny.
Robbo, scouting question here is Simon Jahr, the Danish center back. Is he the best center back in Serie A right now?
He's a decent center back, but I'm not saying he's the best center back in Serie A. There's a lot of good center backs playing at the moment. You don't see them all the time, but yeah, there's a lot of good center backs. I wouldn't say he's the best at the moment. Bastoni's done well for Inter. So not yet.
Final question. Kind of hate it when they throw in a question that's for the host. Sebi, who's your favorite ESPN FC pundit? It really put me on the spot. Since I'm looking
that's
at...
Easy, that's an easy
it
answer.
It is. Since I'm looking at Stevie, I think it's got to be Steve Nicol.
See? Yeah. Told you it was easy answer.
Easy answer.
Easiest question for a while.
Love Frank, love Robbo. Those guys are great too. Oh, there they are. Always a pleasure to work with
them. The Bald
them.
Brothers.
The more interesting question would have been, Sebi, who's your least favorite ESPN pundits?
Well, we can add that.
Nope.
Why not?
Because.
Right, come on. Who's your least favourite?
It's 2021. Isn't this the year of positivity and all that stuff?
Aye, okay, but who's your least favourite?
There are no least favourites. You are all like my children. You're even in my eyes. I don't have any children, so I don't really know what's that like. I don't know why I made that.
What a lot of rubbish.
All right, let's leave it there before any more rubbish comes out of my mouth. Thanks to Robbo. Thanks to Frank. Thanks to Stevie. Thanks to you for sending us your questions. We'll see you tomorrow.